gay-ass name for a gay-ass podcast.
Leighton Williams is calling from her dressing room at Titanic on Broadway. Leighton Williams, you're on That's a Gay-Ass Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. How does it feel to be on Broadway recording a gay-ass pod?
What a privilege. What an honor. It's chic. Yeah, I've not done that many podcasts since podcasters. Do you say that? Good start.
Podcasts.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. My brain is fried currently. I am, you know, she's on Broadway 8 times a week. But, you know, this is, we're juggling a lot. We've currently got a mouse infestation, but I am here. I showed up and yeah, we're going to make it work.
And listen, sometimes when our brains are fried, that's when we can speak from our truest self and just let it rip. And so, Leighton Williams, we're going to ask you so many controversial questions about Broadway, about your herstory. But I think most importantly, we should start off with, we share the same last name. Are we related? What's happening?
Maybe distantly. Very, very distantly. Who knows? Maybe I have some American. Where are you from? Do you know your history?
My herstory is like Polish Jew.
Okay, I'm gonna say we probably aren't.
Are you not Polish Jew as well?
No, I actually did do. I don't know if you have the show here, but it's called in the UK, Who Do You Think You Are? And I like fully went into like all of my ancestry, and they took me to Jamaica, and like I've got like a book that is like this thick of like every bitch in my not me calling them my ancestors bitch, ciao. Every hoe that ever was in my bloodline.
I think they prefer hoe.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
Your ancestors who have been dearly departed prefer
I mean,
hoe.
For any of us to all have been here, everyone must have hoed at some point because there was a child. So, wake it up.
No. I love that we have that connection. I do find that most Williamses I have met are not white, so it's kind of an honor for me to represent
to be
the Caucasian Williamses.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It is an honor. I do think I'm Williams because of like an Ellis Island situation. It might have been changed from like a Williamstein, but we support their truth.
We support.
And
that's
listen,
so funny you say that, actually. I was just, the last podcast that I listened to was Kiki Palmer, Love Her Down. Feel like we're going to be friends one day, and it would make sense. But she was doing a podcast with Michelle Williams, so maybe we're all intertwined.
Oh my God. And speaking
the black one, not the white one, but also what?
I saw the black one in Death Becomes Her on Broadway.
Not the black one, child, but you know what we're saying.
Okay, so we need to let the listeners know, if they don't already, Leighton Williams was just nominated for a Tony Award for his performance as the iceberg herself in Titanic. Wait. You won the...
That's my certificate there. I'm too lazy to like go and get it. I'm all cozied up right now, but maybe I'll bring it at the end.
Well,
it took me about 10 minutes to do this setup so I can be nice and cozy, but she's there.
And I'm glad that you are cozy for this chat, because I want to talk about the Olivier Award win that you got. I want to hear about the Tony Award evening. I also think it's important, before we ask the Gay Ass Podcast question of whose fault is it that you're gay, we should start with some hard-hitting gay journalism, which is that you recently saw Ariana Grande with a lot of the Titanic cast, including Frankie Grande, Jim Parsons, John Riddle, friend of the podcast, also Mother Grande. Tell me, Leighton Williams, what is the VIP experience like at an Ariana Grande show?
Honestly, it's like, not to be corny, but I think it was just so magical to kind of be there and like, know when you're watching a show, but like, it's, you're like stood next to the superstar's like mother, or like, and just to see that love from, you know, the family. And I've got to say, like, the Grandes have been so beautifully generous in everything that they've done. I'm not sure if this is like widely known, but Joan Grande is a co-producer, but the leading co-producer on the show. So we've been standing Joan from day dot, and she's been a dream with me personally. So I only can say fabulous things about that woman. She's just like, unbelievable. And Frankie is my, like, he's my room, well, not my roommate, we don't share a room, but he's right next door there. And kind of what you see is what you get with him. It's just like, he's crazy, yes, but there's so much love and so much heart. I wish people knew that a lot more. So I see what goes down online, and you know, sometimes I'm just like, I wish you could actually see what I see, because like you're just fabricating stupidness. So to be with them, it was magical, truly.
I can only imagine, and I have to piggyback on the Frankie Grande of it all. I have noticed that the internet has given her so many issues over the years, but the
internet
more
love it, don't they?
They really do. I think it's partly because Frankie is so who he is and in all of his colors. And I think that people don't like someone who takes up space. But I've been seeing so much of the press that he has done for Titanic. And also, I know he's promoting his book. And I think you can really tell more and more like how much depth he does have. And it's a shitty thing on two levels. It's like, you know, straight people who don't want to see a gay person be themselves, but also a lot of gay guys that have self-hatred that are doing the trolling. I think it's important for us to say
it's us as well. Sometimes it's just like, it's the same thing with women. Like, you know, their number one haters are going to be other women. It's just like, it's actually just, it's silly, but to be kind of welcomed into that space on that night and just see like a literal, dare I say, like one of this generation, the most iconic pop diva vocalist hands down live. Like, you can't, the mic was on. There's no, it's just, it's actually extraordinary how she can do that, like night after night. Because we know what it's like, you know what I mean? We're out here doing it 8 times a week, but to be able to sustain that level of vocal is, that's some next level talent.
I had friends who saw the show that you were at in New York, and they said the exact same thing, which is that she is otherworldly. And I don't think I've never seen Ariana live, but I need to fix that, because I have. Yeah. She has been one of the reasons that I've been gay for so many years. But I think that's a good segue into asking you, Leighton Williams, the famous Gay Ass Podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Honestly, do you know what? I don't think I had like a fit PE teacher, annoyingly. I think mine was kind of crusty, so it's definitely not one of them. It could potentially be the Spice Girls.
Huge.
Like, I was a little bit I mean, 94, I think, was one of the years where they had their big moment. And that's when I was born. So I have to feel like I was born into Spice World. And I grew up with, like, too young to kind of be standing in at their concerts. Later in life, I actually went to their concert with my mum, the last one, which was beautiful. To be there with mom, like, mama, I love, was just so magical. It might be the Spice Girls, you know, because I was bumping and grinding to them really specifically. And there was just something about not being a girl, but being so obsessed with girl power and not understanding why I loved them more than anything and anybody else, you know?
I do know. I also can only imagine what a young gay boy in the UK would feel about the Spice Girls, because us American gays were already so taken. But you were born really into their herstory of the year that you were born was their, you know, being at the top of the charts, as it were. And have you ever met any of the Spice Girls?
I actually have. I think I invited Mel. I've got Mel B's number. It's so random that I've got Mel B's number.
I love to know
and
that.
She, like, do you know when someone texts you, but like, you're so scared? Because, like, what can I actually say to Mel B? So, like, I didn't text her back for ages. We actually sat together. So, I did cabaret in the West End. And the week before I was due to play the MC, I went to go see the show by myself, just chilling, low key. And of course, I'm sat next to Mel B. Like, I was like, this is correct. So she was just living and da da da. And then there's this moment in the second act when the cast kind of like get the. I'm not sure if you saw it here on Broadway, but and whether they did the same, but they bring somebody up or a few people to kind of do like a little, like, you know, woo, you know, audience participation. One thing about me, when I'm on, I'm on. But bitch, do not get me up. If I'm off duty, I am off duty. The vocal is off, the body is off. Like, I really don't like being in and around the fourth wall when I'm just like, unless I'm pissed, unless I'm drunk, you know what I mean? And I was just like trying to take it in. And I thought also, it's just not classy for me to be getting up on that stage whilst like, I'm about to take over.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So they're like what's he doing on the stage? Like, just, bitch, you've got one more week and it'll be yours. But Mel was, like, trying to, she was like, go on, get up there, get up there. So I had to kind of, afterwards, I was like, she was like, what's up with you? Are you shy? And I was like, girl, you don't know me, you don't know me. But, like, I basically told her that I'm, like, a performer. And then we had this back and forth. And she was like, I've been on Broadway. I was like, I know, babe. Like, I've seen your bootcuts of Ren and Chicago, iconic. Yeah, so we had, like, a little back and forth. And she was like, give me your number. Like, I'll come and see you. And I was like, what the fuck? Not thinking that she would actually text me, and she did. So yeah, I saw that she was doing like an activation for some kind of, you know, hashtag ad summit, right, in New York. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to shoot my shot. And thinking she wouldn't text back, but she literally did. She was like, thanks, I've already gone, but next time, like, I'll step through. So yeah. So that's one Rams. Mel. The second Mel, that was a long story for Mel, but she deserves it. She's a Spice Girl. Mel C, I've met a few times. We did this. Sure. I don't know how it didn't get picked up. It was called Queens of the Universe, I think. And it was like a pilot. And it was me, Courtney Act, a comedian called Rob, and then Mel C as judges. And we picked, like, well, not we, but the producers. It could be a soap star. It could be like a TV star, a comedian, like all these blokes. And they got into drag on like a Saturday night primetime TV show, and they had to, one had to do comedy, one had to do a dance, one had to do a song. So they all did different elements of what drag is. And it was kind of amazing for the time. Like, you know, you had these people that everyone loved from TV doing full puss.
Full beat, yeah.
On Saturday night TV. And I was just sat next to Mel C. Like, this was also before I was like Leighton Williams in the UK. Like, I was kind of on the way up, but I was like, bitch, I'm sat next to Mel C.
But also, I can see you on a judging panel so clearly. I really loved.
Well, because you probably,
you so know the biz, so you can uplift, but also, not that you would read a bitch, but you could also give it to them straight, but also from a place of love. Because this is what I find about you that's so interesting, is that for people who might not know, Leighton Williams played Billy in Billy Elliot on the West End as a literal child. You then debuted on television at 14 years old in Beautiful People, alongside one of our favorite character actresses, Olivia Colman. You then had a breakout role in Bad Education in 2012. You started in Everybody's Talking About Jamie. I mean, you've had this crazy career in addition to all the other things, but yet we can all tell from the jump, you're not a monster. You're already such a good hang. Aww. Like, you're such a, like, clearly lovely person on and off mic. Why do you think you're not a monster after achieving such success from such a young age?
Well, I'm sure there's some people in the world that will think I'm a monster, lol. Depends what time of day you get me at. But no, I genuinely believe, I think because I'm from quite humble beginnings,
yeah.
Like, I feel like divaship is like earn and like a graft. And, you know, there's certainly moments, the older I get in my career and the less fucks I give and I'm not more, I know what I deserve. I definitely can be like, well, this is what I need, ABC, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know. It's just, I'm just a good time girl. I love to have a lol. I love to have a giggle. I'm always having fun. I just think it's so much easier backstage to be, like, to get through work with that energy. Because I've seen how, I've probably done contracts where people are like, he's a dick, maybe. And it depends what I'm going through personally in that moment. But from leading a show at such a young age, I really did learn how it can really trickle down. If there's a bad egg at the top, especially when I was, so Billy Elliot was my first job. And then all these years later, well, 15 years later, I'm playing Jamie in the West End. And it took that long for me to play a title role again. Mm. And I was like, this time as an adult, I really want to show, like, if I walk into the building moaning and groaning and, oh my God, I'm so tired. How the fuck do you think everybody else underneath me is, not underneath me, but like, that was a wrong term, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
the company.
How are they? If I'm, they know I'm getting a cute check. They know my face is on the front of the building. They know, like, I'm the star. I'm doing inverted commas for those that are listening because I don't like to call myself a star. But I'm the star of the show. If I'm coming in with this bad vibes, then it's just going to trickle down. And I've seen it from company members that haven't necessarily been, you know, good leaders. So right. I've tried as much as I can just to lead well. I also think you know, I celebrate 20 years in the biz next year, which sounds crazy because I don't even feel that old. But
yeah, born in 94, like Jesus.
Do you know what I mean? I do like to take people under my wing, and whenever I can give a little wisdom, like I fear I'm stepping into like an auntie mother era, even though I'm literally 31.
Yeah.
Like my two boys that shared the dressing room with me that played Jack and Cal in the West End, they called me mother, and both of them are older than me. Because I just have this like, there's this like, they were like, mother, like a first.
Well,
day
you have wisdom.
Do you know?
And you've seen some things.
We've seen some things. They're just from the get go. It's like, hey, boys, so, and this. No, I don't think this is diva, but like I think we should discuss some dressing room rules. Like, we shouldn't be eating stinking, dirty, farting. Like, let's respect each other. There's a green room for a reason and a microwave there. Like, and they were all just looking at me like, shit, bitch. it's been a while since I shared a dressing room. So I was like, if we're going to do this, let's do this in harmony.
And you know what? That's someone who knows their worth, but also is not afraid to speak their needs into existence. I also think it's probably the fact that you've seen so much stuff is that you've seen so many stars, probably from like the full spectrum of behavior. Like the fact that you're doing a Broadway show right now with, yes, Marla Mandel, who did this pod a few years ago and we stan her, but also with Jim Parsons, who was on one of the biggest television shows of all time in the US for so many years, making the most money that anybody was making on television. And then the fact that he is doing 8 shows a week with this incredible company. Like, you've worked with people who have reached the top, and you yourself have reached crazy heights. I think it's like you've seen that. Success does not make you like a different person. It's really how you treat people that is the 100%. Most important. But since we're bringing up Titanic, I think it's important to get into a few specific questions. One that might be controversial: since you play the iceberg, if we put ice in your drink, what shape? Cubed? Crescent? Pebbled?
Diamond, darling.
I knew you'd give a good retort. Listen, if you enjoy this podcast, you're probably horny. Or at least consider yourself to be a part of the horny experience. And y'all, I just read a book with a whole bunch of hornery. It is called The Dare by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And if you listen to the podcast for a while, this is not the first time I've talked about Harley LaRue. I love their work. And this book is just so delicious. It follows a former prom queen who falls for a guy she went to high school with, but it's a guy she would have never expected to go for. There's also gay representation and gay hornery. And I do think you, as a gay ass podcast listener, would enjoy. I highly recommend you go check out The Dare, if only for the fact that Amazon banned it temporarily for being too sexy. What? So go check out The Dare by Harley LaRue, available now wherever books are sold. Y'all, I've got another book recommendation for you, and this one is a spicy gay cowboy romance. Ooh, yippee-ki-yay. It's called Saving the Rain by Elliot Rose, and just listen to this description. After a devastating rodeo injury, bareback bronc rider, Case Wilder has no choice but to rely on the one man he spent years trying to forget, his estranged stepbrother and longtime rival Zeke. I'm telling you, these scenes are very explicit, and the fact that it's about stepbrother, what? I was blushing on my recent American Airlines flight. No jork. And by the way, I've never had a stepbrother fantasy, but forbidden love has absolutely been a part of my journey. I'm sure you all know that I talk about daddies here. When I was younger, I would read nifty.org and those camping stories. This book sort of took me back there. These like hot outdoor scenes. Just so delicious. So please check out Saving the Rain by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold in print and an ebook. I promise you won't regret it. Second Titanic question is, you had this beautiful Tony evening, but I on Gay Ass Podcast, we really get into the real alite of it all. What happens to somebody who gets nominated for a Tony? They find out they did not win that Tony. Are you still able to enjoy the rest of the evening? It seems like you really cut up.
Babes, that was literally win or lose. One thing about me, I know I'm gonna fucking party.
Yeah.
And famously, but oh shit, that's a. I'm working on my own show at the moment, and I'm trying to find these clips of like just stupidest things I've said, and this is one of them. The first interview I had backstage at the Olivier's, I was just like, I just want to party, like, and win and lose even more so. I don't like to use the word lose, but like not go my way.
Yeah,
I was just ready to find my mom, to find my partner. My besties were in town, and I ended up like getting my life with Nicole Scherzi for literally hours. And if I could put this into perspective, like, I've been an OG Pussycat Doll fan from day dot, and they know now, and we're all weirdly, it seemed crazy to say out loud, like, we're actually friends. Like, I know pretty much all of the dolls. Over the years, like, me and Ashley have got close. Like, I know Kimberly, like, and then Nicole was like the final one that I really needed to get through, and it happened to be Tony tonight. So I was like, at this point, this is a win for me, because if you would have told, like, 13-year-old Leighton, who knows every single bit of choreography to every single music video, live performance, I'm not kidding. More so than the dolls, by the way. I bumped into Robin Anton the first time I met her. I was pissed as a fart at the, like, a press night. And she, so for those that don't know, Robin Anton is the creator of the Pussycat Dolls. And I cornered her and I was like, I told her how much of a big fan I was. And she was like, okay then. And she kept spitting, like, you know, random numbers, like, should be like bottle pop and buttons, don't you? And I would like perform the numbers for her in the corner of a theater bar.
Which shows that Leighton Williams has the range. You can be star, but also a pussycat doll.
So that for me was just, and there was lots of invites to these beautiful, crazy parties. What's that one that everyone goes to?
The Colton?
Yeah, for after the Tonys. The one where it's like,
I wish I could be that girl that could say, oh, it's this one. I have no
idea. There's like a party, like people that are listening to the public, it's like real famous, and you know. But my publicist, you know, shout out to them. They got me like the cute invites, but it's just like, I'm not going to leave my mum, my boyfriend, and my besties. So I was like, let's stay at this party. Thank you, Jamie Lloyd, for organizing that party. And let's just get our lives. Eventually, once everyone went to bed, I was like, let's go try and get into this exclusive party.
Smart.
At 5 a.m. They were like, I think this is going to be a no. I was like, yeah, I wouldn't let me in either.
Did you see Nicole Scherzinger in Sunset Boulevard?
Twice. On the West End and on Broadway.
Oh, look at you. I think it's one of the best performances I've ever seen on Broadway, truly.
Honestly, because I came back here last year. And obviously, I'd already seen the show, so I was doing my rounds of theatre trips, and I was just like, I can't not see my girl Nicole again. So I came to see the show on Broadway, and we were doing up J-Ho after the show on this very stage. And if you would have told me last year that me meeting Nicole backstage, thanks to Tom Francis, because I know him from the UK, of course, UK honeys, if you would have told me a year later I would be also performing on that stage, I would have been like, yeah, whatever. You really just don't know what and when these things are going to happen, you know?
No, I mean, the fact that you've had this 20-year career, and then you're 31, and then we can only imagine the next 5 years, 10 years. I mean, it's actually a nice way to look at things, because I myself get really bogged down by the day to day of like, am I not doing enough? I mean, like, I'm like a Virgo who always thinks that I am.
Me too.
Okay, shout out. When's your birthday?
13th of September. I mean, I don't really know that much about Virgos other than Beyonce is one. So obviously,
that's the most important thing. I'm the 21st of September, so I'm the last day of Virgo, but very much a Virgo through and through. And
what?
I don't know. There's just like, there's an intensity to us that can be great, but then on the other side, it's like,
it's a lot.
We're hard like, on ourselves.
I literally, you've called me a good time actually, because I had therapy today. So that's why I feel like I've been doing so much chatting. And I am very much so like, people think, and I'm going to be real, like, people think, you know, you've got the Olivier, you've got a Tony nom, you must be, like, batting away. It's just not the reality. Like, we, even at this point and at this level, and I think I'm in this, like, middle ground. Like, I'm not this A-list Tom Holland, you know, celebrity. I'm not, like, a, you know, D-list. I'm just, like, in the middle, hustling. It's not about A, Bs, and Cs, but I don't know how to try and articulate to people this. Like, I don't just wake up and things get offered to me on a platter. By the way, if my agents listen to this, they do their work, trust. But, like, I also am, like, working overtime to help them work overtime. Like, they see me coming.
Oh, yeah. I saw the interview that you had told, might have been Paul Wanerick, about you saw the press release about Titanic going to the West End. And
I said, hi.
Yeah, you sent your agent a text being like, this looks fun, and you weren't even available to do it at that time.
And that's what I do. And I wasn't even available to do this. But, like, I just know that sometimes don't block your blessings. Mm-hmm. Like, put it out into the universe, and if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Because honestly, you know, business is business, and people, they forgive and forget. There's been a couple times in my career where I've had to, unfortunately, jump ship. And I'm not saying that's a thing that we should always be doing, but sometimes it's meant to be. Like,
yes.
And somebody else is supposed to do the thing that you were originally meant to be.
Right.
Do. And probably my two biggest roles, Jamie and The Iceberg, I wasn't supposed to do. You know what I mean? If I would have gone and down the path of, I don't want to upset these people, let's stick to this, I probably wouldn't be here now, you know?
Listen, it's very inspiring to me. I also think that what you're speaking to, that you're just saying, is sort of hard to articulate, where you're not A-list or whatever it is. I think that the biggest gift I've learned from this podcast is interviewing people like you and hearing this over and over and over. Because Joel Kambooster just did the podcast recently, and he said after Fire Island hit, people thought that, you know, he was going to feel differently. His career would have been completely, you know, made. But he said that, no, he immediately moved the goalpost to try to get his second movie made and to get the next hit. And I think that, in ways, the hustle never ends, no matter what industry you are in. And so I think that I'm really trying to, like, enjoy where I am right now. And I'm sure people listening might roll their eyes because I say it all the time, but it's really hard. I think it's really hard to be someone who's ambitious and then be able to stop and smell the flowers. And it seems
especially like we've got bills to pay, bitch.
Hello.
Like, I got a mortgage up in London. Like, luckily, I got to a point, thanks to my Jamie contract and doing the tour, which, by the way, is kind of a little bit, I don't want to say frowned upon, but, like, once you've done the West End, it's like, okay, people don't really expect you to be running on the road. And I said, boo, I want to buy a property. I want to make sure that this gig has actually not just helped me career-wise, but, like, and hopefully, listen, the same with this Titanic, like, full, like, tea. Like, I'm not, this is not no money gig. Trust and believe it. This is giving, like, this is Olivier Ward and Tony Nom. Thank you. And Broadway debut.
Yes, yes. Wait, okay. I need to interrupt you to ask you a few broad questions about that. And by the way, we are going to, in a few minutes, cross over to the Substack side so we can put up a paywall and I can ask you some really hard-hitting journalistic questions.
Like we just said, we've got bills to pay, bitch.
Hello?
You better get on that Substack.
Speaking of...
speaking of, and the podcast is over.
Literally, paywall went up now. No, it's we're going to do a couple more questions before. You mentioned, though, like, Broadway debut, huge. What was the first Broadway show you ever saw? I'm dying to know.
That's actually really... I remember somebody asking this at the week, and I remember because I think it was Cats, but obviously not this one. It was my friend Corey Snide, who was in Billy Elliot with me, and he was one of the American Billies that got flown over because there was not enough talent in the UK. Lol. Every time they flew an American Billy over as well, as the UKs was just like, why are they so fucking good? Like, they were just so good. It was, like, almost embarrassing for us. It was like, oh, shit, we really need to get our shit together.
I saw Billy Elliot on Broadway and was obviously blown away. Quick side of story is that Diana Ross was in the audience that night that I saw it. I saw her hair first. I was like, oh, my God. Anyways, your friend from Billy Elliot.
Yeah, so I saw him in I think it was the version... It wasn't, I think, because of controversy even then, like, it wasn't Gillian Lynn's version for the first time, I think, on Broadway.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you stagey hoes out there. But I think because that was like, oh my God, they're doing Cats without Gillian Lynn's choreography. Like, ugh. And now look, like, to see it again all of these years later in the version that it is, it was so nice. But yeah, Cats was one of my first...
Incredible. I saw that revival. Well, I guess both of them, Jellicle Ball and the last one, and both. I mean,
I liked the last one, but this one is a bit of me.
Well, Yeah, I've gone on record saying this, that I'm not a cat's girl. Like, it's, I, my husband
period.
Is, period. And my yeah. husband is, like, huge cat stan, and so I can really appreciate the
yeah.
the performances. Like that's my biggest thing from Angelica Ball and The Last Revival. You have to be so insanely talented to do that show. Do I think the show makes sense? Never have, but that is okay.
Do you think it makes more sense now, though?
I think it's made the most sense in Angelica Ball. I think that production is by far the best I've ever seen. I absolutely loved it. But, you know, if I wasn't married to Matt, I don't know if I would have
seen it.
I mean, yeah, I have such FOMO. People were talking about it
so much
that I'm sure I would have. Speaking of, though, like, before we go into Substack, where I want to ask, like, some real lore about Tony's night, about your gorgeous partner, about the time that you
yes.
were licked at the stage door.
Yeah.
What are you hearing backstage about Titanic? It seems like the show is doing well post Tony's. Is there is it open ended, or are you hearing any whispers about that?
Sadly, I think, we've extended past the date that we were supposed to be
right,
going
okay.
to, but we do know, like, we're not going any further, which I don't know how much I can speak on what, like, the situation was, but it was always going to be a limited run. It surprises me. I mean, I'm new here, so I'm just, like, you know, trying to just figure it all out. But when you go out into the audience and you see it pretty much jam-packed, like, you know, full capacity, if not like 80 plus, like, it's like, how are all of these shows not able to run? Like, I just think Broadway,
right.
from what I'm seeing, is clearly broken in some way. And that's for, you know, the powers above that, listen, way above my paycheck to sort out. But there's something's like, if Death Becomes a can't run, if Cats can't run, if Titanic can't run for as long as it wants to run,
what are we doing here?
What's going on? Like, yeah, it seems to be a strange time. Like, exciting time to be on Broadway, but very, like, I can see what's going on, and it does seem to be a little bit spooky.
Yeah, no, I agree with the spookiness. I've said many times how I used to be a musical theater girl, and I would love to go back to it, but part of the reason why I pivoted into another direction is because of, you know, the fact that I would love to own property one day, and I didn't see myself getting there via the 8 bars I was singing for.
Do you know what I mean?
You know,
listen, that's why you might catch me on When I Was a Little Hello Baltimore. Hello, Chicago!
Come
Hello,
on, Chicago!
And
by the way, some of the best shows I've seen were touring productions, regional productions, but listen, it is hard in these streets.
Never seen it.
Okay, so let's do the final podcast question before we cross over to that stunning paywall. The final question we ask here on That's a Gay Ass Podcast is a tough one, Leighton Williams, and that question is, if the world was ending, and you could only save one character actress, who
yes.
would you say?
Do you know what? I don't know whether this is corny because, like, I don't know whether she's would be classed as one specifically now because I don't think she's old enough. But I think in, like, 20 years, I don't know, let me just go out and say it. Olivia Colman.
Yes.
Has she been said before?
It's been a long time. She's definitely been said before, but it's been ages. And a secret part of me hoped you would say that because you worked with her.
I just love her so much. And it's been so amazing. Again, my first ever job working with someone who is now such an icon.
Yeah.
My first ever, you know, I've got Olivia Colman, my first TV job. And I worked alongside Tom Holland in my first musical job. So I've seen from the very beginning, and this was Olivia's first leading role in a sitcom, and obviously me and Tom were playing Billy at the same time, so it was his first job too, and seeing how they have risen up is so, it's so incredible and so inspiring, and it kind of just, every time you kind of second guess yourself and you're like, and just like, no, like, we're just going to keep it moving. I'm grateful to just have, like, a slow trajectory, and I kind of don't want to change that. I think it'd be quite stressful being Olivia Colman and Tom Holland famous. But she, when I worked with her, was just such a gorgeous, loving human being on and off the camera. Like, she taught me how to knit. She actually did. We were all, but the why I got into knitting, but she used to knit in between takes, and then I said to my chaperone, I was like, I want to get some sticks and sticks. Are they called sticks? I don't knit anymore, by the way. But we would literally hide our knitting and our scarves underneath like the couches or wherever we were filming. And then as soon as they called like cut, we'd just get them out and just da-da-da-da. She's amazing. I've only ever seen her a couple of times since, you know, I was like a kid and we worked together. But I remember being quite nervous of going back. It was like an award ceremony or something. And I was like, and I went back to the PR girlies. I was like, I need to go and see Olivia. And they were like, we love you, Layton, but you know, you can't do that. And I was like, no, trust me. She's my friend. And I was like, we worked together years ago. I just want to give her a hug and just like say how proud I am of her. Because we were neighbours as well. She used to live like a couple of streets away from me in Southeast London. And yeah, she was a dream. So
how cool. Olivia Colman. Just how cool to see also like her rise from when you worked with her to now. I also think it's important to bring up the Heartstopper scene when the coming out scene.
It's such a shame that she couldn't do the.
I know. But even that scene, like
when they change people in movies and TV shows, it boots me. But listen, you got to film the gig.
Exactly. It's also like when you see like Wicked and then Elphaba switched out of intermission. You're like, wait,
that happened to me once. I think I had to, can't remember who it was, but I went in second act for Billy and it was just like, I think one of the actors didn't say, oh, cool, Billy, you look different, just to kind of like break the ice, because like it went from a little white boy to me. Elphaba, I think you can get away with because the girl going the green, you know?
You're green. I am. Olivia Colman, stunning answer. And Layton Williams, you have immediately become a Gay Ass Podcast favorite. I could chat with you for hours, and thank goodness we have still a few more minutes to chat on the Substack side. Before we do so, will you tell these stunning listeners where to follow you and anything else you would like for them to know?
Well, hey divas, I hope you've had a good time listening to us. Do you know, I feel like this is always a good introduction to a new person, just listening to them on the podcast. So it's always my honor to be invited on one. So thank you for having me. And you guys can find me at Layton Williams on most platforms. If it's got a tick, it's me. If it's not, it's some rando pretending to be me. Period.
Everyone go follow Layton. Go see Titanic while you can on Broadway. And we continue to be a fan and watch the gorgeous things you do. So over on Substack, we're going to talk about Tony's performance. I want to talk about your stunning man. You went to Fire Island recently.
Yes.
I want to hear some stage door stuff. Let's talk about the Tony performance. How did it feel after that? Because the sound for every single cast that performed was, I'm gonna keep it straight, it felt wonkadoo. And you, by
forgiving.
The way, your line reading, everybody loves semen. I now it's become my new stim, as they say, and I hope people are coming up to you to say it. But let's get into, did you walk off? What did the cast say after you walked off stage?
I think for us, because we don't obviously see and hear it back, so like we just cracked on. And you know, I think, you know, I'm not going to speak too much on what other cast members are. I do think there were emotions were high. I want people to know how exhausted we are by the time we get to the Tonys. Like, this is nothing like in London. The Olivier's of it all is just a breeze compared to the Tony run, and I enjoyed it. But let me tell you, I was glad when it was over.
Oh, yeah.
Because not only did we have the award season of it all, the luncheons, the press, the 9 to 5 before you get to the dressing room, the interviews and interviews. I swear that I could do like one day when we did the press junket, it's like 40, 50 journalists in one day. And like, it was giving Lady Gaga 99 people in a room and one of them. And by the end of it, my publicist was like, a few more. And I said, I don't think I can speak. I genuinely don't think I could speak to anybody else. Like, I have to go and just close my eyes.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to put that into perspective for you. And there's no excuses, you know, like, but in the month up until that moment and the pressure of the day, you are crazy on Broadway as well. Like, sorry, give me the day off. What do you mean I have to do the show?
It's insane.
We don't do that. Like in London, like obviously if I am personally nominated for an award, like this kind of award, let me sleep. Let me wake up and enjoy the day. Let me have a glass of champagne with breakfast. I mean, we couldn't drink anyway because we were performing, which I think was great. But also, you're not only performing in your number. You're performing in the opening. So there's rehearsals for that all week. It is, I was in full Pussy Glam at like 6 a.m. in this very dressing room at 6 a.m. Mm. Then we go over to do a full run at like 8 a.m. Then we come back here, do a show, go back. You're dealing with your family, friends. By the time you get to that performance, you are just fucked.
For the rest of the interview, head to Substack, linked below, where you will also find chats with Colin Braun, Rich Burns, Christopher Pattison Rosso, Tyler Varvel, Sebastian Dino, Cody Silver, Johnny Sibley, Sam Altizer, and more. It's at substack.com/@EricWills. And I will see you there for a gorgeous, hairy, horny time. I love you. Bye.